Welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We are canceling unethical persuaders right and left, taking them down. We're giving the good people the talk tools they need to beat the bad people. Right, Jimmy? Help the good people.
Man, helping the good people is good. Last night, and you know, this is why you need to be quick on your feet. This is why you need to pay attention to Dan. Because last night I went into 7-Eleven. I quit smoking, so I went to buy a pack of smokes. And then as I was going to pay, the guy that was walking out, he mumbled, what do I have to do? N-word, blah, blah, blah. And then I wanted to be the social justice guy that was like, hey, man. And I said, hey, you get out of here before I punch your face in. What was that?
You really
now
said
I'm
that?
The jerk. I did. And I even did one of these and he ran out. And then the guy then, but like I said something stupid. Like if I would have said something so
speech ready.
I didn't have it ready, man.
You
I didn't
your
have
racist
my
speech ready.
Encountering a racist just in an average.
Yeah, those little micro scripts, man. Those are very important in life.
What would you have said? You wouldn't have said it. Would you have said anything or would you just observed?
I typically, I've lived in Los Angeles. I've lived in the South. I typically don't trust strangers. Mm-hmm. They don't have a top end that I'm looking for, you know, so I don't know what they're going to do. So I typically, you know, I don't.
You but read the room.
Let's reset real quick and we'll get back into the story. So I'm Dr. Dan. I told you can jump in wherever you want. It's all good. I'm Dr. Dan, American rhetorician, late night comedy writer, and I bring on my friends and people I know. Right now, Jimmy, like I don't know when this is going to air, but you're like the 30th person I've interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this diversity. Okay. 29 white people, 27 dudes, middle-aged white dudes.
Well, yeah.
Maybe I got to expand my friend list.
Well, and then where would you classify me? Because I'm like I'm an unknown quantity. People see me as they want to see me.
Yeah, I always thought you were Hispanic.
Yeah, I am. I mean, but half, you know, dad's Atkins, you know, first Atkins came, I think, in the late mid to late 1600s to Pennsylvania.
That's white. That's pony white.
Preston Atkins. As a matter of fact, mom just sent me a picture of some savings bonds that my grandmother bought me the day I was born. And I was named James Neal Atkins for 24 hours. Mom wanted to name me after Neil Diamond. And so I've got three savings bonds with James Neal Atkins.
Dude, you should so go back and rename yourself James Diamond Preston.
You know, you're on to something.
Let me introduce you real quick. Okay. This is my guest for the week. Friend of mine, we've known each other for quite a long time. It's self-described hairy bastard, as you can see, unless it's audio. Mm-hmm. I think you have to start with that. It's a dominant visual. I know Jimmy from stand-up first. Then he was my main producer on the Saturday Show, which is a late night talk show we produced here in Austin. He's what I would call a true Austin Renaissance guy. Mm-hmm. Like when I think of Austin, you're seamless.
Oh, well, thank you.
I mean, do a lot of the Austin cool things. You know, you're a thrift store picker and reclaimer. You're a beer guy. You have some causes you do.
I've done a lot since I've been here for 10 years. Well, coming up on 11 years. I moved down here in 2010, fresh off getting off probation for growing weed. And
where were you growing weed?
In Virginia, which was not the best state to be doing that.
Yeah, man, you don't want to do that stuff in the South.
No. And thank you. You know, because when I tell people I'm from Virginia, they call me a Yankee. And then it just proves the point that the education system here in Texas is so great. That they don't know that Virginia was the capital of the Confederacy, but that's a battle that I will just lose.
I'm a Yankee. I get called a Yankee from being from Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The Secretary of State of North Carolina literally heckled me during a stand-up show and called me a Yankee. I'm like, dude, yeah, you can draw the line wherever you want, but trust me, Kentucky's plenty redneck to join the South.
Well, you know, we all learned certain things in school, like when you're taking a standardized test, anytime there was a qualifier, you could almost discount it. It was like, every one of these is true, you know, and then you'd be like, oh, well, I'll discount that. But I've noticed going back to college recently, anytime I'd see one of those qualifiers, I would discount it. But sometimes I'd be tricked because they would be like, oh, well, the answer is that. And I'd say, but
yep.
There's different conditions. And so technically it's a wrong right answer. They didn't like to hear that.
Yeah, they don't really. I was a professor for almost 20 years and test psychology. Like, first of all, they don't teach professors anything about that stuff, like anything mm-hmm. about teaching whatsoever. But it's, you do, like you're making the test and you're like, okay, should I be tricky here? You know, because I could be tricky. Or should right. I just let them get the answer because it's clearly the right answer?
Right.
And yeah, I think some people make that tricky choice and I don't get it.
I like it when the answer was exactly the text in the book.
That's right. That's the way I wrote tests because it's just a memorization exercise anyway.
Right. And then, you know, I failed miserably at my first go at college. I had a 0 GPA one semester at University of Alabama. And you got to work hard.
You're probably still on the dean's list.
Well, not there.
No, it was the University of Alabama. So
I got a letter.
You weren't into the negatives.
They sent me a letter asking me to take the summer off and for an eternity, you know. But luckily I can root for them every year still.
Now, why is that? Why did you hit the, was it just too much partying? Was it just?
Yeah. My dream was radio. You know, I'm kind of, I'm my own worst enemy. So, you know, once I want to do something and then I get into it and then I figure out what the next step is or how to get to the next level. If I'm at a level that I don't need to be at anymore, it's dumb to me. And so, all I was doing was radio. I had a show at one point from like 11 o'clock in the evening to 6 a.m. because nobody else would do those shifts. And, you know, that's at 6 a.m. when you're getting off the shift, that's prime mushroom picking time. And then, you know, it's hard to make it to class after that kind of
what
sketch.
A great life, though. Like if they'd have just known, like you would have stayed there your whole life.
Yeah. WVUA. I'm Jimmy. I'm 40 and I'm still a freshman. Roll Tide.
There's a good screenplay we should write. The guy who figures out how to stay in college his whole life
forever. Yeah,
like, legally they can't get rid of him.
I would have done it at ACC, but then they said, well, you can't continue to get student loans at a 2-year university after 4 years. So, so they sent me down to Texas.
Well, that's something else I love about Austin. And again, I think you kind of fit into this, like figuring out all the wrinkles in the social support system, you know, like Austinites are great at that. It's all the sort of little guy versus government, but they're ingenious. And they always have been about finding ways of getting every, you know, dime they can from the government.
Right.
And you just have to admire it. It's done so well. I think that, you know, the musicians learned that in the past, like, you know, and they all try to collectivize and get some kind of health care, you know, just all those little guy politics.
Right. Well, and then, but it's such a paradox because, you know, you ask the rich guy down the street, well, what should I do with my money? And he'll be like, buy land. And then as soon as you do, get some sheep on there so you don't have to pay taxes for it and you can get the ag exemption. It's like, well, what do I do with the sheep? Do I sell them? No, just put them out there. You don't even have to give them shots. They'll die off eventually. But
well, that's the thing about conservatives, right? Like they're just as dodgy about working the system.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about like, you know, morals and strongness and, you know, Christianity and then do the right. But they're just dodgy, dodgy, dodgy. Every human being's dodgy, dodgy, dodgy. So don't act like you're not doing it. That farm exemption is the biggest social, you know, welfare program in the history of the United States.
Well, and then it gets even crazier when you just like, you can get a tax exemption for just putting up a wind barrier, you know? and so, I mean, there's ways. I mean, look, I'm on TikTok and I follow a bunch of people that wear very little clothing and then do some dancing and stuff. But I also follow some financial gurus and some tax experts. And yeah, like if they taught us in high school, hey, you need to set yourself up as an S corp, and then all your other stupid companies. Like, I mean, let's just go through some of the stupid companies that Jimmy has here. I've got my podcast, The Least We Could Do. I got Jimmy's Bazaar, which is my eBay store. You can buy all the crap that you see here. Everything's for sale. We've got Ancient Astronaut Theorist University. We've got, 40 Days of Tacos, which is about to launch again. So it's my Taco Lent. They call me Taco Jesus. For 40 days, I eat nothing but tacos. And that's been going five, six years strong now. There's so many other stupid ventures. Workoffart.com. We were going to have celebrities put colored talc in their crevasse and then blow out a design on a freshly painted canvas of, you know, like a primary color or something, and then auction it off to save people from ass cancer. So many things. If I would have set those up as LLCs under an S corp, I would be a millionaire by now.
Why is that? Why would you be a millionaire?
I don't know. Some guy on TikTok said that's the way that the rich people are doing it. I think you have to have some sort of revenue stream. There has to be money coming in for the millions to start to accumulate. But I mean, this is all, it's all theory.
Well, again, this is perfect Austin, you know,
right?
This kind of weird hyper intellectualism that kind of goes off into its own little, you know, spiral somewhere over in the corner of the yard. And you're like, what are they thinking over there? You know, so there's a very intellectual / pseudo intellectual / really cool intellectual part of Austin.
Right.
Where he's working angles. They're doing things like that, like looking at finances, even though they don't know shit about taxes and all that. And politics, you know, super popular in this city to talk about, and people to get into their Texas politics. And, you know, it's that kind of weird intellectualism that, you know, a hippie town has.
Right. Well, I'd been told my whole like adolescent and early adult life, you know, hey, you need to go to Austin. You'd love Austin. I don't know what it was about people. People would come to the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, meet me and be like, what are you doing here, man? You need to go to Austin.
Really?
I don't know what it was. They just saw the Peter Pan in me, because they call this, it's a city of Peter Pans. It's a town where you never have to grow up. And it's true. Like, I just traded a tooth cleaning for an alternator the other day. And so I mean, like, what?
Yeah. There's on a t-shirt, Austin, where you can get your teeth cleaned for a used alternator.
For used parts. I mean, it was a remanufactured alternator too. So, I mean,
it's probably been used as some kind of a bong at some point.
Maybe.
Like, everything in Austin has been repurposed at some point for, you know.
Probably pot. A bong. Yeah.
You know, maybe that's why, like, I've never really fit in Austin. This is the fifth time I've lived in Austin. Uh-huh. You know, I went to school here in the mid-80s and got my master's degree. And then my ex-wife was from Baytown. I always wanted to live in Austin. So she brought us back here two or three different times. And Austin and I have never fit. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm way too ambitious for Austin. I'm not Peter Pan. I've been growing up since I was 5 years old.
Right.
So it's always been a mismatch. And I love Austin, you know, for what it is. But I'm always like, Austin, come on. You know, come on.
Yeah. I mean, we missed the mark so many times here. I mean, just our highway system is a example of how little in control we are of our own destiny here in Austin. And coming from DC, you know, like I don't want to say I ran from DC, but I was sick of the politics, sick of the bad sports, and you know, and it's a melting pot. I used to say that DC was like a small microcosm of the rest of the country. I mean, you've got all the different races and religions and ethnic backgrounds and political beliefs, and all the militaries are there, you know, because everybody wants to be close to the the seat of the government. And then I moved to Austin, and it's just smaller version, but just more hicks and rednecks. And it's been frustrating because we're all these people that get along. I mean, you're kind of in the fringe. You're up in South Dallas up there, and you got.
Well, I've wandered into what used to be, you know, satellite suburbs, but now, you know, the beating heart of Austin is just chewing up everything, you know, from the center outward. So I'm not that far from downtown anymore.
But you know, you've got one of them homeless hotels that they're thinking about buying one, I think, kind of close to you. We've got a homeless problem here in Austin, and it's not a homeless problem. We got a homeless problem in America, but we decriminalized having a tent or sleeping on the street. Before, if you were homeless, you fell asleep on the street or passed out on the street, you'd get arrested, and then all of a sudden you've got a charge, and you got to go to court, and then you don't pay that bill, and then you've got a warrant, and then you've got another charge, and then, you know, it's a cycle. And criminalizing homelessness seems like a bad idea, but we need to do some stuff to
we're going to criminalize you for not being capitalist enough.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much it, right?
We should go and talk these people through on how to set up an S corp and an LLC. I mean, my grandfather told me a story long ago about one of his friends from his barber shop who was homeless, and he went into the tax office to claim taxes on $53,000 that he had collected from panhandling, and they laughed him out of the office, you know. And you know, so that's when I realized, you know, there's a segment of, well, look, have you ever romanticized hobo culture? You ever thought about jumping?
Romanticized it?
Yeah.
Well, not since I used to, you know, watch Woody Guthrie and, you know, David Carradine is Woody Guthrie and Bound for Glory.
Yeah.
You know, that whole 40s, you know, coming out of the Depression, the way that they sort of glamorized a little bit of that life, you know, that sort of underculture on the rails.
Jumping the rails. I mean, the days are gone. We can't hitchhike anymore. It's against the law.
Yep.
On the road, Kerouac, that story, we can't do that anymore. So we're stuck at home, and we've been stuck at home all year long. And I think people are just going crazy. But you know, what can we do? This is what I'd like to ask you about, because I'm seeing a shift. People are, they're putting, you know, it used to be God and country. Now it's just God, right? Forget country.
Country's just in the way.
It's God is leading everything.
God's plenty. What do you mean? You need country and democracy.
And then God is mad at us because this country isn't going in the way that God wants. I mean, how do you fight against that? How do you fight against an invisible force that no one can quantify and is supposedly giving instructions through Q?
Godness. Well, let me finish off something on homelessness.
Okay. Are you still in the intro?
Yeah, then we'll jump over to God, because I think like the homeless thing, I think, is kind of interesting from a persuasion standpoint.
Yeah.
Like they're persuaders. Like they stand at corners, mm-hmm. and they have a presentation, and they have a script, and they have an act that they do. Mm-hmm. Like I remember coming up to the intersection over there underneath I-35 at like 32nd Street over in Hyde Park. And there's an intersection there where very popular with homeless. And there were three different people on the different corners. And on this side was a guy with a, you know, two dogs, and the dogs looked kind of hungry. So that was pretty good. And then on the one right across from me was a guy with one leg in a army jacket. So I'm like, oh, okay, wounded vet. That's pretty strong too. And you can get to all three corners, because like you have to turn and stop and everything. And then on the far side was a woman in a wheelchair with no legs, and a guy standing behind her missing an arm.
Jeez.
And I'm like, yeah, I think that act wins. I think
the double pull at the heart. It's been tough. Well, you know, like I did, did I mention that I'm quitting smoking? So lately I've been, you know, like, gotta get a cigarette. And then I know it's 15 seconds. It's just 15 seconds. I can beat the, but so I'm at the store, I buy a pack and I'll grab two cigarettes. And then at the next corner, I'm giving the pack out. But that's it. I haven't had cash during the pandemic. I've been all credit, so no cash. And then also, it's a pandemic, man. I'm sorry. I feel bad for you, but I can't get the COVID.
Well, but that's the thing. So these guys, you know, they're literally little rhetoricians. They're literally having to build something to get, you know, like there's a guy in the intersection by my gym.
Did you give him money?
What's that?
Did you?
Yeah, I gave the lady the best act.
Yeah, okay.
$5. I'm like, you guys have worked on this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate good production.
You don't know how hard it was to saw off these legs, sir.
But that's what you know, like anymore. You look like I'm sitting there, and a lot of times I'm waiting. It's a long light, and so I get to review the show. And there's a guy who's way too kempt. Like he has a Van Dyke, you know, has a kind of hip knit hat. His clothes are pretty clean. I'm like, I don't think you get it, man. I think you're not hitting the right emotional strings.
Well, every once in a while, we'll see one hit the news. Like, remember the golden voice of that one guy? He was like, hey, how's it going? I'm CABC and, you know, WNBC or KNBC, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember that exactly, because he rose himself up as a character outside of that morass of homeless, which we tend to just dump them all into the same thing. And we're like, oh, they're all the same, that, you know, they're there for the same reasons. They are homeless. That's their identity, mm-hmm. you know? But when something flares up like that, you're like, oh, there's a human being in there. Look at that.
Right. Also a human being that had some flaws. So then once he was on the Today Show, he was picked up by all the news media. It was this great story everybody wanted to jump on. And then it was like, He had priors. He had a rap sheet. And then they were like, oh, we got to take the car away from him now. And it's like, no, just give him the stuff and let him go away. Just stop paying attention to him. Let him live his life, you know?
Well, that's part of like when you look at rhetoric only gives people certain pathways to think in, certain grooves. Mm-hmm. And one is hero and villain.
Yeah.
And if you look at our dominant politics right now, it's a really strong way of thinking about it. It explains a lot, but either you're a hero or you're a villain. And both sides are trying to shove the other side, you know, off their log and over into the other thing. So like that guy's homeless, which is kind of neutral,
right.
You know, for certain times in history, that's become a villain, but until it becomes overriding and like they overwhelm the city, it's kind of there in neutral. You feel sorry for them, you know, sort of a victim space, but that guy got pulled out and moved over to hero. But then when they looked and saw the villain, you know, ticking off these villain boxes, then he just loses that status.
Yeah. Unfortunate. But, you know, I'm a cause and effect kind of guy. I understand that we've got a mess before us right now, but we need to work on not creating homeless and educating people or giving them a strong platform to, I'm not asking the government to raise our kids or anything, but the parents aren't doing it on the grand scale.
And you look at effects, like once you get to effects and you're trying to like deal with the, you know, symptoms of things and just cut them off and stop it without going back to cause. Yeah. You're in a losing game. Like it's just going to keep reinfusing itself. No matter how well you take care of the homeless or anything else, there's going to be more homeless coming because of, you know, the societal conditions that create that.
And if we create the greatest program for getting homeless off the street here in Austin, they will all start coming here. So we need to build a coalition of cities to, and, you know, Portland used to give, and I think they still do, they'll give you a free one-way bus ticket to anywhere in the country and don't come back. You know, that's effective, I guess, but it doesn't solve the problem. So
no, but it solves their problem. It doesn't solve the macro problem, but it eases their problem. Mm-hmm. Like I thought you were going to get to, we need to build a wall around Austin.
Oh man. I don't know if it's appropriate, but Gene Getman, you remember Gene Getman? He used to have this stupid joke that I told the mayor once and he didn't laugh at it. He said that Austin was like the Israel of Texas. It's a bunch of people that get along nice and live peaceably amongst themselves. And then they're surrounded by a bunch of bearded men with guns that want to kill them. Right. And
good joke.
It's a good joke. But it just always fell flat. It's a smart joke. You've got to understand what
That's
Israel
a solid
is.
Joke. I haven't heard that angle about Texas. That's solid.
Yeah, it was the Jewish elite in Hollywood that was trying to keep that joke down, I think. So,
let's finish off homeless with this. Okay. Like one of my favorite homeless experiences here in Austin was years ago. I saw a guy selling roses, and a Mercedes pulled up, was right in front of me, and I was right behind him, so I could hear them talking. The guy rolled down his window, and he's like, "Hey, man, how much for a rose?" And the guy's like, $3. And the guy in the Mercedes is like, "I'll give you $1. I'm like, "You are haggling with the homeless in a Mercedes? You scumbag."
Know your audience. The homeless guy missed a mark. He should have said $10. and then he would have talked him down to $5. And he would have made $2 more. You know, it's...
See, you should produce the homeless. That's kind of my point. Like, rhetoricians produce every persuasion moment. So, like, were you telling the story before you came on, or about the 7-Eleven? Have you told that story?
I think I opened with that story. Okay.
I can't remember if we recorded that or not, but like, rhetoricians want to look at every situation where there's a, you know, potential for either successfully persuading somebody or unsuccessfully, and they want to prep for it. You know, rhetoric is the ultimate monologue. It's the ultimate prepared communication. So like, you know, with the homeless guys, like, even I always thought like they need producers, like, write a good sign, like, make sure you can read your sign, make sure your dog looks really pitiful. Mm-hmm. Like, if you produce these guys, they'll make more money for themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think they need, you know, they need to take courses.
There's a tipping scale where you can overdo it though. You know, scary.
You can't look like you got too much skill.
Yeah. Or scabies. So, you know, you gotta, it's a careful dance. I saw a kid that was out there in a suit, and he was in a suit coat, and he's like, "Don't have money for pants for a job interview." And that guy ended up on the news, you know? So, you know, But there's the thing.
Give money to? Who do you choose? Like, who gets your heart? Where you're like, are you just sort of, you've already made the, you know, commitment to helping the homeless, and doesn't matter what they do, you'll help them. Like, some people won't give money to the young because, like, that guy could work. Look at him.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And some people, you know, it's got to be a certain amount of tragedy in the presentation. So, what about you? You don't have any money to give. So
I haven't been carrying cash. And so it's been a year of not giving. I feel terrible.
Can you Venmo the homeless? I think we should be able to Venmo the homeless.
You can't do that. If they had a QR code, they'd get some money.
You know, it should be where you could take a picture of them.
That would be something.
And you've got the facial recognition. Well, they couldn't recognize your face with that much hair, but like a good facial recognition system, you could Venmo them a couple bucks.
Yeah, but, you know, the system would come back on top of them, because then they'd be getting income. They wouldn't be reporting it. And then the next thing you know, they're getting picked up on street corners for tax evasion in the next couple of years because they're getting income. And then, you know, that's a lot of these people are on Skid Row. It can happen in a minute. You know, there's a large percentage of this country that is one or two paychecks away from homelessness,
which now, is crazy. This country's so rich, and the idea that people that are citizens and are trying could be that close to poverty, that's insane.
It is insane. And then, you know,
like,
I was
that that way in Rome? Like, were the centurions like, "Hey, one stab wound, you know, one I catch one in the thigh, and we're going to lose everything"?
Well, I was just watching CNBC earlier today, watching the status of my GameStop stonks, and and they're arguing against the $15 minimum wage and how raising the, this guy is making six figures, maybe seven. He's on CNN, CNNBC, CN, whatever. He's on the damn talkie channels. Yeah. And he is telling us that $15 an hour is going to bankrupt the country. What are these companies going to do? They're going to, and this is supposed to help the brown people of the country. Well, the country, the companies are going to just fire them. They're going to go to other ways to supply their customers with the services they need. And they're
I think that was called slavery, right? Didn't they use that as an alternative pay system
right
at some point? You know, because it was cheaper. They probably made the same argument. I'm sure they were making the same arguments, right? Like, you can't free these slaves because we can't pay people.
Yeah.
All the businesses will go elsewhere, you know, where slavery is acceptable.
When we free them, where are they going to go? They're going to need houses. They don't have any money.
It's kind of like, you know, how people argue that men shouldn't be able to have a vote about abortion because it's not a male body issue. You know, females should be the only ones to vote for that. Well, the rich voting about poverty issues should not be allowed, right? Why should they be able to vote on this? Like, go to the people that this is their life experience, ask them what would be the most helpful for you, and, you know, let them vote on it.
Well, you know, it's going to hurt Bezos's bottom line. It's going to hurt the grocery store. You know, the meme that I saw was, you know, we've heralded the grocery workers as heroes, but we're not going to raise their rates. You know,
it's a way that way across the country with helping professions, though, teaching, social work, all these things, none of them pay, you know.
HEB saved our lives here in Texas. If they hadn't done the curbside delivery, we would have all starved. There would have been, yes, we had 2 days of no toilet paper, but that got sorted out. Okay, 2 months of no hand sanitizer. but they provided us with kolaches by the end of the week, and I'm thankful for them and all the young kids that maybe thankfully, because when you were young, you thought you were invincible, you know, in your up until about 26. When did that end? When did the veil of invincibility start to fade?
I'm from Kentucky. Like, I came from no money and no education and everything. So I always knew I was invincible. I always knew somebody could vince me, you know, if they wanted to. I mean, what it means to live in America with no money.
The state motto is, hey, y'all, watch this. and I get it.
But, you know, like, living in this country with no money, you are constantly vulnerable. And you know it. Mm-hmm. Like, anything goes wrong and you can't do anything about it. You know, you're so susceptible to all the institutional forces, the legal forces, the police, everything, you know. Like, the pandemic is a weird thing for, because it's the first time the middle class in recent history has taken that kind of full-on poverty hit, like that kind of fragility of life, you know. And it's not like we're just helping the people, like the, you know, stimulus, which is just survival money.
Right.
It's not stimulating anything. It's the first time we've had to look and go, hey, the middle class needs some of its money back. You know, everything went away. And the rich are going, nah, you don't. I don't think you need that. I don't think you need your money.
It's a collective sorrow. All of us are going through it. So everyone is affected in one way or another. But, you know, the housing crisis, that was a, well, you shouldn't have bought that house so expensive, you know? And so it was easy to discount the people that were going through some troubles because they had gotten themselves into it. But It's not, I mentioned GameStop. It's not getting it in, you know, getting themselves into it. It was kind of like following this, oh, fear of loss, you know, everyone else is buying a house. Oh, it's the American dream to own a house. I've got to own a house. I can't qualify. Oh, I can with this junk loan. Well, then get me in it. And then boom, George Bush doesn't lower the rates or raise the rates at all. The market tanks, and then here we are.
Yeah, but that's, like I said, that's the power of rhetoric. I tweeted something this morning about, If you want to see like the enduring power of American rhetoric and all the little sub threads and sub strands of American rhetoric, which are so embedded in this culture and which dominate people's thoughts and behaviors and communities, look no further than this crazy Marjorie Taylor Greene being able to make it to Congress, become a congresswoman by just parroting gun talk, which comes from early American rhetoric that the reason we were able to escape British tyranny was because of personal gun possession. And it's literally a rhetoric that got embedded back then, and we've been using it ever since. And she's just saying that script. And that was enough to get this clearly mentally ill person, you know, at least mentally compromised person into Congress because the rhetoric is so strong. And all you gotta do is run the script. And that's when you were talking about God earlier, you know, you started into that. It's just a highly scripted world. And if you want to live in that world or use the people that are already in that world, you just talk that script.
Yeah, it's they want to take your guns. God, well, and then I don't know if we ever discussed at length my time working at a Christian radio station.
I remember you said you did that like when we were doing the podcast before the Sheometry.
My desire to work in radio was so strong that I took any job. And so I found myself behind the board producing pre-recorded broadcasts. And some of the things that stuck with me, there's this one guy, he'd be like, "And you know the devil exists because Muslims exist." That is a sermon that we play every Sunday, or we played. I don't work there anymore. And then the other one that it's right about now because they're going to have the National Day of Prayer coming up. It's the pro-life movement thing. And it's in the book of Peter, I believe. There is something
there. No book of Peter.
Okay, Paul or something. I don't know. Peter, Paul, and Mary. Is it something like that?
they came up with some Bible tunes, those three.
They did. But their thing is, they believe that Jesus will not come back until all the abortions are stopped. So they are waiting. There is a large segment of the Christian population that is actively waiting for Jesus to come back. And they believe that we are all hindering it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, and they're right. We all decided to, you know, keep the world, you know, a little as ugly as we can to keep Jesus away. It doesn't sound like it's going to be good when Jesus comes back. I'll tell you that. It sounds like a bad day to me.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to take it.
I was really hoping it was going to happen on this December was the first time that Jupiter and Saturn aligned, and we were going to have the Christmas star. And I was like, if of all times, this is it. Let him come back now. Let him come back. And instead, he came to me, and now he's in me. I am Jesus now.
You are Jesus. Thank God.
Don't tell anybody.
Friends are wild. Remember, we've been friends.
Yeah.
Don't be too bad to me when you figure out where to send me for all eternity.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I've always thought that it's completely unfair that you live like a good length of life is what, 80 years? That would be, most people are happy at 80.
Yeah.
That much. And then you're dead for all eternity. It doesn't seem like the natural state for a human being is dead.
Yeah.
Like being alive is the unnatural stage.
Well, is it dead or just non-existent?
No, don't get my technical. Don't get your technical in my joke. We're dead way longer than we're alive. And that just doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Well, like dead for 80 years, I could handle.
Can I ask a follow-up? Are we dead before we're born?
Well, we're non-existent.
Okay.
We're not corporeal. Who cares?
Okay.
My point being.
In the timeline of, because we could go to a cemetery and see somebody that died in 1776, and they have been dead longer than they were alive.
Three times as long. They've been dead for like 250 years, and we're just looking at him going, man, that's a long time to be dead.
The guy's been dead, man.
He's good at it.
He's very good at being dead. I'd probably be great at being dead. But that's not one I'm ready to try on yet, you know?
How old are you, Jimmy?
I'm 45, and I learned from the high school janitor after football practice what I want to do. He said it. He was like, boys, when I die, I want to die on the upstroke so I can give it to her one last time on the way down. Now, I didn't even know what that meant. I was a freshman in high school, and I'd only been making it out. And
your janitor said this to you.
Yeah, yeah.
What was he thinking about all day long while he's moving that mop?
the one last time. Dan, we're in a crazy world where what I'm worried about is the unknown and the people that believe in the unknown. So
mystical stuff. Whenever you wander into that, like, so one of the courses that I've got set up over at Rhetoric Warriors is Converting Conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so
have you gotten any blowback? Like, are people fighting you? Like, it's like homosexual conversion therapy. Like, this is very controversial, right?
Conversion?
Converting MAGA to a right thinking or centrist thinking person, right?
I didn't say what I'm converting them to. I just said I'm converting them. Okay. Maybe I'm going to make them worse.
Maybe.
My thing, like with politics, like I try to, again, rhetoric gives you some options that other people don't usually use, but try to escape political rhetoric because it's just a trap. Like as soon as you start left, right, liberal, conservative, you know, those are traps. Those are linguistic traps. And so, like I tell people, like I've started my own party, the Comedian Americans
mm-hmm.
party. So I vote for the funniest person. I vote the person that it'd be most fun to hang out with at a bar,
mm-hmm.
you know, that got some ability to entertain up there. And I think we'd be better off if we all just voted that way. And conservatives, my problem with conservatives, you know, within that system is that they're just not very fun. You know,
right.
They tend to squash the jokes.
Oh, and it's all I see the levers in the background. And we just got this new city council member who, yeah, she's got a couple ideas up there that I've heard come out of her mouth. I even interviewed her on my old podcast. That I had to leave because it just got too MAGA crazy. But she is pushed and she's been elevated by certain groups and they're the Save Austin group, you know, so they're trying to criminalize homelessness again and all this stuff. So it's the Green, Marjorie Green Taylor or whatever her name mm-hmm. is. She didn't get there on her own. She was just was so affected that somebody saw her as a tool. And
well, they actually have training schools, and a lot of these people are coming through, and the Democrats have started doing this too, which is a good idea. But the right has been much more organized for the last 30, mm-hmm. 40 years about its politics. And they have recruitment schools that, you know, they identify somebody that can talk decently in public and is crazy enough to go after, you know, a political election position. And they do some training with them and they, you know, get them sort of prepped and they give them some support and then they push them out into these races. So they're never doing it on their own. They're never like AOC on the other side came from, you know, a training school, like a, not so much a school, but like a program set up to support people who want to get into politics
mm-hmm.
that are identified as having some political talent. And so that's great. You know, that's what American politics is supposed to be. It's supposed to be everybody working hard to get their, you know, stuff into the world. My problem with the right isn't always with the content of their beliefs. It's with the unethical persuasion techniques they use to get them into the world.
Mm.
Like, for example, just slander.
Mm-hmm.
The right uses slander as a major, you know, tactical weapon in politics. And like you just did a little while ago where you're like, you know, you're taking our guns and all that. It's just a slander position because nobody is doing that, you know? And so they've weaponized that and made it part of their party. and as a rhetorician. I'm like, no, 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 you can't talk like that in America, because it'll ruin all our public discourse streams. It corrupts and pollutes everything. So you end up getting people to leave who believe crazy stuff because it's in the public discourse.
Right.
And that's dangerous. So we need to get rid of that.
And it's all misunderstanding or not. And then I don't want to say do your research like that. That now.
Good luck. Good luck doing your research.
Do your research is now the
it's a MAGA cry.
Yeah, that they're like, well, you just haven't done your research. I'm telling you, all you need is vitamin D. Vitamin, these masks, they will kill you. These masks will kill you. What? Why do doctors wear them? You know how small that molecule is. There's no cloth that can hold that molecule. The molecule's in your spit. Your spit's big enough to get caught in that. No, do your research.
I don't do logic conversations with the right because they're caught in skew logic.
And they'll do the whataboutism, and then they'll be like, well, what about our email? I mean, like it'll go so off tangent, and then you're fighting nine battles. It's brilliant that they've trained all of their all the people to do this. And then
it's really not like it's very easy to look and see what they've done. I mean, they've got a top-down communication system that the left doesn't have. So the think tanks come up with scripts. They come up with all the terms. Like they'll put out every day, they're putting out these massive, you know, basically folders of here's 100 arguments pro-gun, you know, and they'll pick a few of them and tell the politicians to push these in public. They'll hand them out in the TV stations. We'll start using those scripts. And so what happens is the people down here who are watching that media are just absorbing that script and then re-saying it. So they're not thinking their way through those scripts, but they're being given professionalized scripts, which is why it's sometimes hard to argue with them because they sound like they're making real points.
Right.
But if you know argument, you know how to work through logic a little bit. If you can slow them down, because the other thing they do, an unethical technique, is they blitzkrieg. It's what I call just sort of this blare, you know, hit the horn and don't let up. And they blast. And so they won't slow down, and you can't do logic on blast.
Well, did you, as a rhetorician, you also studied debate, right? Did you ever, were you on the debate team?
No, I never did any of that. My high school didn't have any of that stuff.
Okay. Well, we had it. I was on the debate team. And then one year we had the resolution like the United States should significantly increase space exploration, right? And then you were either for or against, and you just kind of walked in, you drew a number, and you were told if you were for or against. But we had this guy on our team. He was just like, that, remember the guy that used to sell Nissans? He'd be like, you know, the fast talking guy. He would do that. If we were going against, he would be like, no, we can't do it. It's expensive. Bone density. You know, there's radiation out there. There's no resources. So it's a waste of time. And then aliens. And then, so they fight each one of those, but right at the end, they never conquered eight. Plus then aliens will know where we are and they'll come and kill us, you know, like, and then if they don't conquer that, we win. So that's the style that I think Kayleigh McEnany used to have at the podium. Just let me talk as fast as possible. And then at the end say, by the way, your God is not valid. And then they went.
Yeah, but that's unethical debate. Mm-hmm. You know, that's debate using technique in order to win, as opposed to what debate is supposed to be, which is us co-working towards good ideas and good solutions. Right. So if you are perverting the discourse to win something, then you're an unethical persuader.
How do we do it then? You know, like number one, we need like a reset. Like we need a come to Jesus moment. Like,
why is it always bad? It sounds like Jesus has a baseball bat.
I know. Well, look, 9/11 was a moment where we all came together.
I call it 20.
What?
9/11. I call it 20.
Oh, you just added. So 20 was, that's a hard one to get everyone to buy in on. But, you know, we all came together and we had flags that we bought from China and put them in our yards. and there was a moment there, but then it shifted again. And then, because you need somebody to blame, and an outside force is only good for a while. And then we start to look within. We're a messed up country in the sense that capitalism has really screwed us up in all of our messages, right? So,
well, it's everything is fighting everything. This country is, they call it a melting pot. I call it a melting pit.
Okay. Yeah.
Dump everything in there and then just be like, my God, look at that.
Yeah.
Capitalism is trying to figure out how to live with like Christianity. And you saw those merge, you know, right. In the evangelical movement of like the liturgy of prosperity.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful. Like Christianity is a poverty religion. The founder was a poverty, you know, proponent, like, and now it's a prosperity religion, like, because they melded.
Right.
And America is so many different rhetorics. It's so many different, you know, dreams and stories and logics and everything else just mixing together. The question is like, how do you ever get anything to emerge out of it and become a really dominant, you know, piece of rhetoric that people can hold on to? And the right has done a lot of that, like guns, very clear. Like guns are a clear thing.
Right.
Abortion, super clear. Nobody likes abortion.
Nobody.
On either side.
No.
You know, but the question is, both sides are right. Yes, ending a human life, whatever stage it's at, not positive. Nobody's for that. You know, telling a woman that she's got to do something with her body, nobody's for that.
Right.
Like we can't do anything else. Like, hey, you need bigger boobs. You know, we're going to pass a resolution that all women must have boobs over, you know, C's or D's or whatever. Nobody would ever do that. So both sides are right.
But then there'd be an island of bees, you know, like there. And then I'd probably find a way to sequester myself over there over on Bee Island. Cause I don't really need a C. I'm fine with a good, healthy B. Fine with an A. You know what? Just
you're fine with it. Pay attention to me. Anybody.
Yes, I'm so lonely.
There's a story yesterday. Selma Hayek is just signed with, is it maybe HBO? Somebody's developing a show based on a book.
Maybe you're talking about the one with, what's his name? Ronnie Howard or Owen Wilson?
Maybe, I don't know, it was, but her boobs talked to her.
Oh, okay. This is a different project. I'm into this. Okay.
Yeah. This one got my attention. I'm like Selma Hayek, who's a very, you know, attractive actress. And
it's Look Who's Talking Boobs.
Look Who's Talking To. That'd be interesting to see, but nobody, you know, is going, no, even men are going to back down this idea that I should be able to tell a woman what to do with her body, except for abortion.
For me, it's always been a slippery slope. If the government can restrict a procedure, then they could also say, hey, everybody line up, we're putting chips in you. Or they could say, you know, like everybody's like, what are they going to do? Mandatory vaccinations? No, dude, because we've made it perfectly clear. We live in a free society and it's your choice to die or not.
But it's not like, unless, there, it's,
well, yeah, if you put
it's
a gun
gonna
to
be
your
their
head,
choice to, you know, get everybody else infected or not.
You put a gun to your head in the middle of the street, they're going to stop you from killing yourself, but they can't force you to vaccinate, but you can maybe. You know, this is how capitalism, we need to figure out how to use capitalism to our benefit. So it's,
I agree with that statement.
You don't have the vaccine. You can't go to Disney World. You can't go to the Weezer concert because you don't have a vaccine. Now, we can tattoo on people's arms. Probably a bad idea. From your facial reaction, I would say
that one's a little
yeah, okay,
by history.
So that's what everybody's worried about, you know, like the government's controlling us, but at the same time they're totally fine fighting for the government to control us, right?
Well, and again, that's the issue. Like I tend to use sometimes the visual of a pie graph, like with lots of pie slices in it.
What kind of pie? Are we talking chocolate pie?
I would say sweet potato pie.
Okay.
Right. I have a great story about sweet potato pie. I'll tell you here at the end before we get out. But think of it has 50 slices in it. And every issue has 50 slices.
Right.
Right. So like gun laws, you know, one slice is bazookas. You know, you can't have a grenade launcher legally in this country, right? Like there's a certain caliber that we don't allow.
Right.
But why? The Second Amendment says I can own a weapon. I should be able to own a nuke.
And I have friends that have gone through the hoops that have the semi or the fully auto weapons. They have a bazooka or a AR with a grenade launcher. They are able to do that because you have to become a gun dealer and pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in insurance or bonds or something to get some of this stuff and pass background checks. It's worth it to them. To me, I got these.
I think those need, you know, some licensing right there.
Oh,
one fist of iron, the other of steel.
I'd let you
right go. Right one don't get you.
The boys got a mind of their own.
I've seen you get all up on your back going, you know, at a taping, I think it was, when somebody got too close to your camera.
Oh, did I? Yeah. I almost killed somebody on Monday. I quit smoking Monday, and I had a customer who was surprised that I was going to charge him something for looking at his car. And I went from 0 to 100 in a second. Could have used some smart words there, but luckily my boss walked in and kicked me out. And I said, why'd you kick me out? He said, I need you for the rest of the day, and I couldn't afford to take time off to bail you out from jail.
So that's real, man. Conflict, like rhetoric, words are better. They keep you out of jail. Like you almost can't get thrown into jail for the words, you know. But when you go to the alternative systems of negotiation, they get you.
There's consequences. Well, and we ultimately would have probably ended up buying him a new vehicle from the resulting lawsuit. You know, so I'm
not
glad
that they don't deserve it. Human beings are infuriating. Mm. The way they do things is completely, you know, wrong. Always almost, you know,
this is why I look to you as my sage, help me with my rhetoric. I need to constantly work on it because I'm getting older and I heal slower and, And I can't be relying on. I mean, people think I'm scary because of this gruff appearance, you know, this outward appearance. But I'm a teddy bear, Dan.
Thing I've always said about you is that you're, you know, sweet natured, but you got a trigger. Mm-hmm. But it's not. I don't see that trigger very often. Maybe now that you're not smoking, you know, I'd see it more. But
oh, I had some today. we're working on
some today.
Yeah. I have hope though for this country. I'm seeing already a kind of a switch in the way that we're talking to each other. Maybe it's because most of the folks that have been pissing me off on social media have been banned, or they've gone to, well, what's the new one? They got kicked off Parler. There's like it's Outdoors or something. Oh, yeah, Clubhouse. Clubhouse is the new one. I'm looking.
No, Clubhouse is not that. Clubhouse is like I got on Clubhouse like 3 days ago.
Clubhouse
is just a bunch of marketers.
Is that all it is? It's just just nothing but influencers influencing each other.
It's just influencers trying to come up with something to say to get other influencers. And I'm like, I'm looking because I think I like the idea of it. That basically it's you listening in on a conversation.
Yeah.
With, you know, three or four people who are supposed to know something. And then you can try to get on stage with them by waving. And if they let you in, then you can talk.
Okay.
And I like to listen to smart talk, but I haven't heard a word of it on Clubhouse yet. I'm waiting for some smart talkers to get on there. Huh.
Interesting. You got to send me an invite because I'm just sitting there waiting to get on it. I want to.
I'll do it as soon as we get done. I got four. They gave me four today. I got new invites.
I gotta protect my name. There was a Jimmy Preston wrestler out there, and I heckled him into the point of he changed his wrestling name, I think. So, you know, leave me alone. It's my name. I was James Neal for 24 hours, but I'm James Preston Atkins. Go by Jimmy Preston. Now that I've announced it, they're probably going to cancel my Facebook account. They're going to be
Jimmy
like,
oh, Preston's a good name. That's solid.
Well, I, as a little kid, I said, if I'm ever an actor, I'll be James Preston. If I'm on the radio, I'll be Jimmy Preston. And I was on the air before I was behind in front of the camera. So it's kind of stuck.
Yeah, I like it. I'm you're Jimmy Preston, you know, whether you're a wrestler or not, to me, you're going to stay Jimmy Preston.
And it, the move from Dan Britton to Damned French was a good move for you. I think it's you should stay with that.
My daughter's in France right now for her senior year of college. She's doing she goes to the University of North Texas, and she's doing a year abroad to finish up. And she was telling me that in France, you say your first name, your last name first.
Okay.
And so she has to tell people, hi, I'm French Quincy. And she's like, they look at me like I'm insane. It'd be like saying, hi, I'm America Dan.
Yeah, you are.
You know?
Yeah, you are, Dan. You are America Dan.
I'm America Dan. So, yeah. Well, it's been fun, man. There's so much more to talk about. I'm going to circle back around with you. Everybody I talk to, and I'm like, yeah, we got like another 10 hours we could talk. So.
Right. Well, I hope I didn't lead us through too much of a, well, I didn't lead anything, but it's propel you into too many tangents. I don't know.
Awesome. You're good stories. Good idea. You always have things to say. I always enjoy talking to you. So all good, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And where can people find you? What's your podcast?
It's called The Least We Could Do. It's on Saturday nights from 8 to 10 Central Standard Time. It was just after coming out of mushroom induced haze, I said, you know what, I do need to reconnect with society, you know, and I can't just cocoon during this time. And so it's supposed to be funny. We do talk about some serious stuff sometimes, but it's fun. So
I'm sure it's worth it. You're always worth listening to.
You can always email us at the.least.we.could.do.show@gmail.com.
That sounds like the most you could do, the most periods you can get into a sentence.
So many periods.
Hilarious. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Head over to rhetoricwarriors.com, learn some persuasion, take a course. Be amazed at how much more effective you are when you actually know some things before you launch into this activity. Like, you wouldn't walk into the tiger cage without your sequins, right?
Right.
You got to get prepared before you take on those tigers. So we will see you next time. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
Thanks, Dan.